Whether you're a seasoned business leader or just starting out on your entrepreneurial journey, you'll have questions around how to navigate the complex and ever-changing business landscape. In Zuwani's At The Lake sessions, we discuss thought-provoking topics, exploring practical ways to align our day-to-day business activities with God's plans and purposes.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
So I just wanted to welcome everybody to At The Lake. Yeah, really, really looking forward to spending this time with you. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Kerry Lee Pascal, and I head up the Zuwani Initiative with a lot of the different people on this call that are part of running with Zuwani, and Zuwani is actually part of something that is part of the Mergon group, for those of you that have heard of Mergon. And so what Zuwani means, it actually means at the lake. It's a Swahili word for at the lake, and it's a place where people can come together, gather, share stories, be strengthened, and then go out back into the world to redeem what has been broken. And so I think that's some of the heart. We believe that business leaders on the African continent can fundamentally shape our marketplace and transform society through business practices that are biblically aligned. And so some of the heart behind Zuwani is that this is a platform, a space, a community for business leaders to share inspiring stories, innovate local resources, and equip one another for kingdom impact. We're going to be looking at biblical accountability. So when you hear those words, you might think of obligation, or you might think of opportunity. It depends on your experience of what accountability is and has been in your life. So the Bible actually makes it clear that God wants us to embrace accountability in our lives. In a world where doing the right thing is often scoffed at or is really hard to do, we need accountability to choose the narrow path. And so leading a business with integrity and following biblical principles is not an easy path to walk. So how can being accountable help us on this journey that we're all on, where we are wanting to honor God in what we're doing in the marketplace? So today we have four esteemed panel members joining us. We have Peter Fora, who will moderate the discussion, Winnie Njenga, we have Muyiwa Bamboise, and Joey Mangalo on this call. Peter is the CEO of Mergon, which is an entrepreneurial investment company that exists to create kingdom impact and equip others to do the same. Peter started his career at PricewaterhouseCoopers and later joined our founder, which is a seasoned entrepreneur, Francois Fenikak, as the financial director of Infotech, the technology subsidiary of Mergon. In 2008, Peter joined, or was actually appointed as the CEO of Mergon, which is a diversified investment company that partners with like-minded entrepreneurs to co-found and build impactful businesses in South Africa and Europe. Mergon also established itself as a strategic resource partner to numerous ministries operating across Africa and the Middle East to really expand God's kingdom. Peter lives in Stellenbosch in South Africa. Then we have Winnie Njenga. She serves as the executive director of the African Council for Accreditation and Accountability, a pan-African organization that seeks to enhance public trust in faith-based organizations through accreditation, advocacy, and creating awareness about the needs for accountability. Winnie is a certified professional mediator, governance and organizational development professional. She serves on various boards in diverse sectors, including business, not-for-profits, and governments. She's also a co-founder of the TFG Trust that focuses on mentorship of young people in lifelong accountability groups. And Winnie lives in Nairobi, Kenya. Then we have Muyiwa Bamboise. He is the chief strategic officer at the Educational Advancement Center in Ibadan, Nigeria. He has a bachelor's degree in biochemistry, kindred spirits. I have a biochemistry degree too, and studied Anglo-Industrial Project Planning at Bradford University in the UK, and has an MBA from the University of Ibadan. He now works in education and leadership training. He's also a trustee pastor of the Vine Branch Ministries and the president of the Christian Theological Seminary. He currently lives in Ibadan, Nigeria. And then we have Joey Mangalo. He is the defense coach of the Vodacom Bulls rugby team in South Africa. He was a decorated rugby player that represents the emerging Springboks, Blue Bulls, and Junior Springboks. In addition to being an accomplished rugby player, he also holds a master's degree in industrial and organizational psychology. Joey has also planted churches and has been very involved in ministry over his lifetime so far. Joey's a good friend and lives in Pretoria, South Africa. So really, really looking forward to the discussion we're going to have today on accountability. Peter will be moderating this call and or this discussion. So I'm going to hand over to you, Peter, to take us forward.
Thank you, Kerry. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our At the Lake discussion. It's so great to see so many good friends on the line. I want to single out people and say hi to you and to you, but I'm not going to do it. Just a great joy and a privilege to be on the call with all of you this morning. And really to have an interactive discussion. I've prepared some questions for our panelists, but my brief to our panel is to enjoy this time, to participate in a conversation rather than in a Q&A session this morning. So our topic for this morning is accountability, and I think we all, as Christians and as stewards, we know that we need to be accountable, but for many of us, accountability brings up different perspectives. I think it is so often misunderstood. You know, for some people, it conjures up an image of someone who meddles in your life, like that's gonna tell you what to do or what you shouldn't do. Or maybe for some, it gives a perspective of a type of a confessional relationship. We have to go and tell someone everything that you've done wrong, and you almost feel like you dread these accountability conversations. For others, it's about having someone who you have to tell what your goals and objectives are and what decisions you're going to make. And you maybe feel like that's someone you need to go and report into, almost like a boss, you know, type of relationship. And so there's many misperceptions around accountability. Yet for me, when I think of accountability, I think rightly understood and expressed in a healthy way, it can be incredibly liberating and empowering. Accountability done right can shape our life journey and can ultimately help us to be the best version of what God intended us for us to be. And the reality is none of us stand alone. We need each other. We need relationships. We need people who journey with us. And so understanding accountability and healthy accountability is actually not optional. It is part and parcel of walking the Christian journey and walking in relationship with others. And so I think it's so valuable for us to pause this morning and reflect on what does it look like to be intentional and understand how do we build lives that are accountable in a healthy way. And so today we're going to unpack some of what accountability means. We're going to look at some biblical perspectives. Where does the concept of accountability come from? What did God design for us, or what was God's intent and his design for us when it comes to accountability? We're then going to take a bit of a cultural lens and look at accountability in the African context, and what some of the challenges there are there, and how a lack of accountability is impacting the potential of our continent and our ability to unlock it fully. We're going to spend a few moments looking at accountability in business and understanding what that means and why is it sometimes working and why not. And we're also going to look at some personal stories, some experiences, some practical tips that between the panelists and myself that we maybe have to share with you guys around accountability. So yeah, I think it's going to be a full morning. We're going to touch on a number of things, but then we want to open up the floor to hear what the questions are that you guys have around this topic. Ultimately, it's also this morning is about making sure that we address some of the things that's burning in your hearts when it comes to this topic. And I'm sure as we go through these conversations, there will be questions that come up. So please post them Kerry, do we post them in the chat box or in the chat box? Yeah, so post those questions and we're going to pick up on those questions and try and answer them as best we can. So thank you from my side as well for the panel that's on this conversation. A group of people who have deeply thought about this from different perspectives, who are all esteemed in the different fields that they are working in. And so I am genuinely looking forward to this conversation and hearing the different perspectives that's going to come from our conversation. All right. So I think without further ado, let's jump in and let's start with a biblical foundation for accountability and a biblical worldview through which we need to view this concept of accountability. And so, Winnie, maybe we can start with you and just start with the question, is the concept of accountability, is it truly something that God designed or is it a man-made concept because we don't trust ourselves? So talk to us a little bit about the biblical origin and God's design for us when it comes to accountability.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. It's such an honor and a privilege to be here. At the Lake, Ziwani is a Swahili word, and Swahili is our national language in Kenya. So I'm quite at home here. And I love your background, Peter, just for the record. Thinking about accountability and whether it's a man-made concept or whether it's the way that God designed us, when we go back to the beginning, we do well to go to our foundations. We do well to start at the beginning where God began. And in the Garden of Eden, the Lord created this beautiful place of refreshment, this place of fruitfulness, this place that was supposed to be the venue of his fellowship with man. And he put him in there. He said to him to enjoy it. He gave him stewardship over the Garden of Eden. And so accountability and stewardship go together. Accountability is about faithful stewardship of what has been put in your hands and being accountable to the person who has put that resource in your hands. And so right there, we see God establishing a governance framework, if you may, for accountability. That he creates a place for fruitfulness. He creates a place for multiplication. He creates a place for life to be lived fully and in abundance. And then puts this person in charge, gives him responsibility even of naming the animals in there. And then, you know, allows him to enjoy and steward that resource. So accountability is principally and primarily a biblical concept. Accountability begins with God. And so it resides well with Christians for us to be accountable because that's our framework. That's the way we were created to be. We were created to be accountable beings. And so when we talk about biblical basis for accountability, it's not an oxymoron. It's exactly the way that God intended and purposed for it to be.
Thank you, Winnie. Muyewa. If I listen to what Winnie is saying, I would argue that God entrusted us with everything. And so I'm only accountable to God. Why do I need to be accountable to anyone else? What is your thoughts on that?
That's a really good question. Now, when God created man, he created him for fellowship. And what happens in the fellowship relationship that we have with God, when Eve came into the picture, the expectation was that that fellowship would be extended. And so when we're in fellowship with one another and in fellowship with God, the relationship that we have with God creates for us a picture and paints for us a platform or a pattern for how we are to relate with one another. And so if God gives us co-stewardship of his resources, then we have a co-responsibility for accountability to each other for our different areas of responsibility around those resources and a joint corporate accountability to God. And so it wasn't limited to what I do with what God has given me, an account to God alone, apart from the fellowship of the others that I'm a co-steward with. Accountability originates from God and spreads to the community around us. We must be responsible stewards of the environment, for example, that God has given us. Stewarding that environment requires that there are different people handling different facets of accountability of that environment. There is accountability for fruitfulness, for productivity. It's not a one-man show, not a silver bullet. It requires for one person to feed into that value chain, one particular area, and the other one feeds in the other area. And therefore, there's this corporate responsibility before God as Christians, but there is also the individual responsibility to our co-laborers and our co-workers in this space that God puts us together for fruitfulness. So accountability has to, of necessity, be one with another, one to another, and corporately before the Lord. Singularly and corporately before the Lord, Peter.
I love that. Thank you. That is such a wonderful and clear perspective, looking at a biblical framework of where this originates. What also strikes me from, if I reflect on the creation story for a moment, is how incredibly natural that accountability relationship between Adam and Eve and God was in the garden before the fall. It was a walk in the garden. It was a journey together. It was born out of relationship, out of wanting to spend time together. And something that it just feels like it was completely natural. And if we think back of that story and when Adam and Eve took from the from the fruit of the tree and they disobeyed God, suddenly this walk became a tension, and it became a threat. And so it's interesting for me to think about how this the redeemed state of accountability is actually a relationship, a beautiful relationship that's good for us, whereas the fallen state of accountability is a tension, is about hiding, it's about, you know, trying to evade that that accountability. And so, yeah, I would encourage all of us just to take a moment to allow that image and that that story and what Winnie has just described to us, just to linger for a moment and let it drop into your own hearts and just consider what that relationship with God was intended to be, and with our fellow man, what that was intended to be, and how it was a healthy and protecting and just an extremely natural sort of status for us to be in as human beings, in related to the environment, in related to God, in related to each other, corporately and as well as individually. Joey, it's so great to have you on the call as well this morning. We spoke about stewardship, and when we speak about stewardship, we immediately go to our gifts and talents. Are we accountable, and do we need to be accountable for the gifts and talents that God has given us? And what does that look like? You work in an environment with sportsmen who are extremely gifted and talented. And I'm sure you've seen so many young people come through with these incredible gifts and talents, yet maybe struggling with this concept of being accountable for their gifts and talents. How have you dealt with this in your personal life? And how does this tie into your sense of biblical responsibility or you know, a biblical accountability?
For me, Peter, I'm going to try and link those two worlds, the accountability and the stewardship. And I think it's 1 Corinthians 4, Paul is speaking to these guys. I think they're judging other people. So, but he's saying to them, hey, guys, listen, what do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast like you did not receive it? So the disposition is one of, hey, let me understand that everything I have has been given to me. So like the Lord specifically gave me something. He made Joey and gave him the ability to talk to people, understand the game of rugby so that he can be a rugby coach. So I've been given this thing. So that's my disposition. It's like, Lord, okay, thank you now that you've given me this. And then it's interesting, Peter, that you speak about how we have extremely talented people. But when you read a lot of sports books, you find that it's the guys whose attitude and their effort beat the talent that make it. They always say that talent, hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard. So what I'm trying to say there is that if I'm a talented person and I don't steward my talents, then the person who's less talented, who stewards the effort and the attitude and the hard work, they can supersede me. So what do I mean? So I started with disposition. So my disposition one, I'm thankful. Then the other three D's also I want to speak to is then my role then, once I know that I've been given something, is to say, can I go into a process of discovery, development, and devotion? So can I ask the question, God, what have you put me on earth here to do? What have you gifted me with? I see I'm able to do 1, 2, 3. Whether I need to do a psychometric test, whatever, to help me know, let me discover what God has given. Because we know God is good and God has given. That is a fact. That doesn't change. So now I have to discover, who am I and what have I been given with? And once I do that, that's where the faithfulness part comes in, is that I need to be able to say, okay, I need to develop these gifts. And then once I'm developing them and using them to the best of my ability to glorify God, then I'm devoting that both to myself, the people around me, for their good and for God's glory. But everything I've said now, Peter, is all wonderful. And to the, I keep saying Peter because you asked me the question, but I'm speaking to everyone to finish off, is to say all of those all start with good intentions. But if I don't have somebody around me to constantly remind me, hey, Joey, you told me a month ago you're going to go discover your public speaking gift. Because everyone, that's why when the year starts, we all say we're going to go on this massive diet, we're going to lose weight, we're going to do whatever. And then the 10th of January, we stop doing it because there's nobody nudging and say, hey, Joey, remember you said you're not going to have biscuits and milk at 12 o'clock at night anymore, which I do. But I need somebody. So I'm just trying to say, in the process, to wrap it up, in the process of discovery, development, and devotion, I need somebody to keep nudging me to help me steward what God has given me.
And thank you, Joey. That's that's so easy to remember, guys. The three Ds: to discover our talents, to develop them, and to do that in devotion to God, and use that in devotion to God. That is easy and succinct to remember. So I will definitely remember that. But what you talk there is about faithfulness, but it's also about a gratitude response and a sense of serving, not just myself, but serving others with what God has given me, and fulfilling or walking in the fullness of what God has entrusted to me. We're going to come back to that, because I'd love a little bit later to ask you about who are some of those people in your life that that you are accountable to, and that who are going to ask you, Joey, what have you done about this? And how do you respond to that? But before we go there, you mentioned scripture and Paul speaking what he writes. And I was just thinking, both Winnie and Joey, and please let me know if Muyiwa actually does make it onto the call. Is he here?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Muyiwa. I'm going to start with you, Muyiwa. You've followed the conversation now around the sort of biblical foundations on accountability. Please let me know, please, is there something that you want to add to that conversation? But also then following into that, I'd love to hear, what are some biblical characters or perspectives that stories that stand out for you in terms of accountability? Is there someone that really comes to mind and say, that's a great example of someone who lived accountable, and that it was really critical for that person in that moment or on that journey to be accountable, to walk into the fullness of the calling that God had for that person.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry for, I got it mixed up with the timing. I thought we were 1 hour ahead. I found we were 1 hour behind. So anyway, apart from Jesus, who, when he was doing the high priestly prayers from John 14:15, was telling God that all you have given me, I have kept, except the son of perdition, which is demonstrating accountability. But if we look at the life of David and compare him with Saul, the big difference was Saul was not ready to be accountable, whereas David was accountable. You know, when Saul didn't do something he was supposed to do, or he did what he was not supposed to do, he had people to blame. Oh, it's the people. Okay. But David, when he did what he wasn't supposed to do, he told God, I'm the one responsible. Don't punish the people. I'm the one. Okay. So for me, David is an exemplary character when it gets to accountability. He knew what was committed to his hands. He knew what was supposed to be done with it. And he gave record. He gave a record. He opened himself up to rebuke or punishment if it was necessary. You know, you will see how he gave records of what people gave, how he gave records of what people did. You know, that's accountability. You know, showing that you know what has been committed to you. You know, and giving it up to scrutiny so that someone can see, oh, you've done well, or no, you didn't do well. So for me, David is a good example of somebody who held himself accountable, you know. And Saul is the opposite. You know, he was supposed to wait for sacrifice. He said, oh, the people were going away. You know, he was supposed to kill Agag and all the things there. And he said, the people decided to preserve some animals to sacrifice to you, to your God. That's talking to Samuel. So Saul is a bad example. David is a good example.
That's such a great example. Leonard Sweet, the theologian, refers to Nathan as a truth teller. Do you have a truth teller in your life? Someone who's has a standing and a relationship with you and who's prepared to hold up that mirror and say, you know, he doesn't necessarily tell you what to do, but he can hold that mirror up and hopefully for you to see that, that you know, what it is that you need to see. And so, yeah, I think that's a wonderful example of a life committed in accountability, and not just in moments where something goes wrong, but actually a life lived in accountability, not just to God, but also to other people. Guys, I'm going to move us on a little bit. Let's think a little bit about culture. We live in Africa. Africa looks different from a place like America or Europe. And so our societies, our worldviews look different across different continents. And in Africa, we understand that there's very much a shame culture in Africa. And so when it comes to accountability, how does that relate to honor and shame? And what does accountability look like? Is there a place for accountability in the African culture, and what does that look like, Winnie?
Peter, that's a wonderful question. I love Africa. And if we go back to the beginning, I like going back to beginnings and origins. When we look at the societal structure of the way that African societies and African communities were established, they were purely on accountability frameworks. You had a community, and I'll speak to, I'll make generalizations, and I'm sure that this, you know, is the case from Cape to Cairo amongst African communities. the communities lived in a village. The villages had structures of authority, governance structures. And within those structures, there were safe institutions that drove those communities. That's inherently African. That's who we are. That's the way that we were made. So you had the chief or the elders, and then you had structures. If I may go back to the polygamous structures were largely societal protection structures. The labor that served on family land, that stewarded family shambas or farms, was children. The children that were born in those families. So you had large tracts of land. The people that worked that land were your children, wives and children. The men were responsible for protection of the communities, the security, and they went out to herd and look for meat for the family as the women worked the land. And then there were structures for sustainability and food security, where they built granaries and they had food stores to carry them through to the next harvest, and they separated seed. And there's a whole, you know, framework that you can work on there in terms of food security. So by nature and design, Africans are accountable people. That's the way we operated. Now, unfortunately, that structure, just like the fall, was destabilized. Okay? Enter a new system of governance that brings in, you know, breaks those that sense of community, that sense of accountability within community. We even had structures for punishing a departure from what was the expected norm by the community. And those were there, and I can go on and on about this. But enter a situation or a political transition that then broke those structures and remodeled the African people into a different sense of accountability structures that was more enslaving than it was building and encouraging. It didn't build on the structures that we had, it broke down the structures that we had. And then transition, fast forward to post-independence Africa, where we then have a carryover and of a different structure from what we were originally established in, and the messing up of that. And that's where, you know, the degeneration that we see in terms of a lack of accountability in Africa is. So in my opinion, you know, a convoluted sense of broken accountabilities, not borrowing or building from what we originally were, and then now creating structures that, you know, enrich others and impoverish others continues to be part of our framework in Africa, which is very unfortunate. So a departure from who we were and what we were and how God created us and established us as a people, you know, has led us to where we are. That notwithstanding, God is a redemptive God. And God is God, and he's sovereign over the affairs of men. And so Christians within the continent are the ones to carry forward the mantle of the redemptive work of accountability and reestablishing that across this continent. If we have faithful stewardship of God's resources on the continent of Africa, driven by Christians who understand from their origin, not just as Africans, but as God created it to be, then we will, if we have Christians carrying that mantle, then we will most likely have a more accountable continent. So where we are at now is there's a lot of brokenness. And from Cape to Cairo, stories, horrid stories of a lack of accountability, corruption, poor getting poorer, rich getting richer, the rich poor divide because of a lack of accountability and ability to share resources equitably so that you're strengthening as opposed to disabling people you know, is what we see across the continent. But there are large pockets of hope, Peter, I must say that. There are large pockets of hope. There are so many frameworks that are driven, such as the organization that I work for across the continent, organizations that are driven to reestablish that order and to encourage and disciple, especially faith-based institutions, to come back to alignment on accountability as God intended it, and to speak a language of the heart of the people of Africa, because we were created that way. Our societal construction was that way. And God's creation and intent for mankind was exactly like that. So that would be my quick answer to accountability and the African people.
Thank you, Winnie. So what I hear you saying is that a lot of the brokenness that we see on our continent could actually be attributable to a breakdown in the accountability structures that was had been formed over centuries in our continent. And that over the last couple of centuries, we saw that breakdown, and there was nothing to fill that void. And that part of what happened from that is that we saw in all the symptoms of a lack of accountability start stepping in or coming in. Muyiwa, I mean, what are some of those symptoms that you see? And then also, maybe, do you want to expand on what Winnie shared, which is something that I haven't thought of before, that actually as Christians, we need to lead the way in bringing a redemptive perspective on accountability and restoring healthy accountability in our society. Do you have any thoughts on what that looked like, and how do we as Christians lead in the culture that we are in from that perspective?
Yeah, I must thank Winnie for that brilliant exposition. As Africans, we grew up accountable. But the problem was that it was designed for small settings. And I believe that modernization, urbanization, broke that formula. You know, then people became anonymous, you know, and they could, you know, dodge into the larger community and they do whatever they felt they wanted to do. Because in a small setting, in a village, everybody knew everybody. You know, they say that a village raises a child, you know, so you couldn't do something without somebody holding you. Now with the situation, I agree with her that it's Christianity that can bring us back into what we're supposed to be. Even in the African traditional religion, the one around where I live, the Yoruba, they have what they call, I mean, the small gods, they swear with them, and nobody dared to go against what he was supposed to do. Nobody dared to cheat or to perverse. But when we look at Christianity, God, like Peter said, is not slack, like some people count slackness, because God doesn't strike you dead the moment you put your hands into what you shouldn't. So people begin to have the notion that, oh, it's easier under this system. So they could cheat, they could lie, they could pervert, take things that didn't belong to them, and they could even cover it up with false reports. So, but those who know God, we are the ones that are supposed to be strong and do exploits. And I believe, it's my personal belief, that, you see, we are the city set on a hill. We are the light of the world. So we're the ones to show the way. Africa is blessed, but we don't know how to use the blessings in the right way. So I believe as we get more and more of us renewed, when we renew our thinking, when we refuse to be conformed to the immediate world that we see, and we begin to walk in line with scriptures, in line with God's instructions, then I believe that Africa can be restored. The waste places can be rebuilt, you know, because they are there. There's a lot of resource, but, you know, there's the need for us to be responsible. Responsibility and accountability, they go hand in hand. They are interwoven, they are interrelated. And I think it's Christians that have the mandate to do that and to restore it.
You know, as I listen to what you're saying, we as Christians need to pioneer and restore what accountability looks like on our continent, in order to bring back a sense of responsibility. What's interesting is that, I guess, a Western perspective on accountability is very much an individualistic perspective. But what we've heard is our continent has very much a community type of perspective. And so could it be as we renew and as we think about what accountability looks like into the future, that it's actually both, that there's an individual and collective accountability that are both important in building healthy individualized but healthy societies? And so, Joey, I'm going to throw this question to you. You're responsible very much for managing a team environment. You've got 40, 50 people traveling together for weeks and months sometimes at a time and spending incredible amounts of time together. What do you think of this thought of individual and collective accountability? Is it something that you guys live out in your team environment, that you've seen live out? And what does that look like?
Good question, Peter. I would say the degree to which the least of us is accountable is to the degree of our team accountability. So what I'm trying to say is if we only need one person to not be accountable and to not reach the standard, that the whole team will suffer the consequence of that. So we only need one guy in a final to do something that somebody's aware of that they don't keep them accountable to, and the entire group loses. So I can't separate those two. I have to say, I think I heard somebody once say that if we speak about the fruit of the spirit, to the degree that you have the least of patience, that's a degree you've got love, whatever, whatever, because they're all on the same thing. So similar in this environment, if one of us is not accountable in the environment, it means the whole group accountability is, I can measure our group accountability to the degree that the lowest person denominator in our group is accountable. I hope that's making sense. And how I'll drive it home, there's two things I want to do. One is almost say, from a team perspective, all the teams in the beginning of a competition get together and say, hey guys, we want to win. And everyone says, yes, let's win. Or you've gone on a business thing, you've gone to a boss parade, and we're going to live by these values and everything is wonderful. We go about, we want to do it. Then at some point, people start dropping standards, and the standard can only be dropped when there's not accountability. Because if there's accountability, somebody's saying, whoa, we decided in December of 2022, we're going to live by A, B, and C, but you're dropping it. And that's for everyone. So it's the guy who's 19 years old keeping the 38-year-old in the team account. We say, hey man, we said we're going to live respectfully. That is not respectful behavior. So the difference for me between the team that wins and the one that doesn't is that these people are able to maintain standards. And the only way you maintain standards is when there's accountability. And I'm going to finish on this note because I don't want to speak a lot. If you see, there's a story in 2 Samuel 30, 23. David is hungry and he's thirsty. He's thirsty for water. And then his three mighty men say, no, listen, we're going to break through enemy ground to go get you water, because that's the standard. We keep each other accountable to that degree, that you are a guy, we're going to die for you. They come back, they bring the water. He says, you know what, boys, I'm not going to drink this water. I'm going to sacrifice it to the Lord. I'm going to throw it on the ground, because that is the degree that that's David. That's fully him. The same David, when his mighty men are away at war fighting, climbs onto a roof at a time when he knows the women are bathing. He sees this woman. if he was with a mighty man, somebody said, hey, David, I don't think you want to be on the roof now. And he's going to say, let's say he gets away with that one. Then he comes down and he says, okay, but call that woman for me. One of the mighty men says, David, surely you, she's married and Uriah is fighting for you. So surely don't. So maybe gets away with that. And then he says, okay, but bring her to me. Then the mighty man says, okay, David, you've gone too far. We cannot allow you to do that. So this David who says, I'm not going to drink the water, and the David who sits on the roof are the same person, but the only difference is the level of accountability.
And Joey, what I'm also hearing you say there is that accountability is not first and foremost a function of title or position. It's, you know, if you talk about David traveling with his mighty men did not have a title or a position over him. It's a matter of a heart disposition and a relationship. Do you want to comment on that?
No, I agree. And I want to bring it back to my colleagues who spoke about us in Africa. We say, I am because we are. So that David who acted so boldly and threw the water onto the ground acted that way because he was in the presence of other men and women who have kept him accountable no matter the standard. And in the village that we spoke about there, I remember growing up in a village where, just outside of Brits, if I was out in the streets doing something silly, I was going to get a pow from somebody who's just slightly older than me. And I would make sure that my tears were dry before I got home, because if I got home with tears, my mother's going to ask, Joey, what happened? Oh, no, Mom, I crossed the road. Somebody gave me a smack. Okay, so now you've embarrassed the whole family in front of the whole village. You're going to get another smack. So it's and that's the beauty of accountability, is that you, wherever you were in the street, somebody was watching you because somebody knew who your mom was. And that is not like I'm living in jail. I'm living in freedom. It's like there's freedom and form, you know, because there's clear boundaries around me. I live in such freedom knowing that, oh, no, I'm not going to cross the street that way. And that's how to go. Not only that somebody's watching me, but it's good for my safety as well. I hope I answered you, but sometimes I go on a tangent.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you. Guys, let's talk a little bit about business. The world of business, it's all about accountability, or supposed to be all about accountability. And I want to break it into two sort of different parts. The one is bigger business, where you have the world of established businesses that have boards and shareholder structures and those sort of things. And then smaller business, where young entrepreneurs are building businesses and often don't have the benefit and the luxury of boards of directors and so on. So let's talk first, Winnie, about big business. I guess very much structured accountability. Accountability structures like boards and ESG and all these different type of structural bodies that we create for organizations are supposed to keep business more accountable, yet we've seen some incredible corporate failures over the last few years, specifically in South Africa, which speaks to somehow a lack of accountability. Why do you think that is? And what do you see in the business world? And when you look at boards and speak to people who are representatives on boards, is there something that we're missing in the business world when it comes to creating genuine accountability and care, I guess, for the impact of business and where business goes?
Thank you, Peter, for asking that question. And I want to hinge or swing on a statement that Joey made. He said that the team that maintains standards is the team that remains accountable. And that's what it is. For businesses, if you set up standards and a value system on which your business is going to be built, you do well to ensure that you have accountability standards that cause for those standards to be a culture of the organization. And so you need accountability frameworks around institutions that create a culture of accountability down to the man. so that there's corporate responsibility as a team for being accountable for the standards that have been set, and then there's individual responsibility. When we work with and thinking about accountable institutions, I can name a couple of faithful, accountable institutions across the continent of Africa. And that's because AFCA, the African Council for Accreditation and Accountability, basically accredits faith-led, faith-driven, faith-established institutions or ministries along seven standards of stewardship and accountability. And those standards assess the doctrinal foundation and basis of institutions, for example. What's your statement of faith? What do you stand for? Does the last man in your organization understand and adhere to and perhaps even sign off to that statement of faith? What about your governance structures? What are the frameworks for good governance? And taking a look into, a very in-depth look into your governance standards and assessing those and seeing the gaps that are there, possible gaps that could endanger and could cause for the organization to crumble. We look at talent management, not just hiring and firing and human basic human resource, but how are you procuring, securing, multiplying, growing, establishing talent so that there's never seepage. And even if you have talent transitioning out of the organization, you're not bleeding the organization. You're multiplying it in transition to another because you've created a pool from within the organization of talent that continues to propagate itself. So you become a blessing, not just to the organization, but to other organizations that will tap talent from you. You're breeding life. You're giving life. Cultural awareness, interdependence, and acceptance, financial management and disclosure, resource mobilization. So we have a framework that assesses and accredits institutions that call themselves by the name of Yahweh, that either have been established by Christian businessmen or are ministries or are faith-based nonprofits, and we say, let's subject ourselves. I think it's Joey Omuiwa who talked about, you know, the redemptive state of accountability where you are submitting yourself to scrutiny. One of my two brothers made that statement, and that's exactly what accreditation is. I submit myself, corporate sense of accountability, to scrutiny so that I have a fellowship with someone who's working with me in institutional discipleship to ensure that I am remaining accountable based firstly on a biblical foundation, because all these standards are biblical standards of accountability. Corporates use them in the corporate sector, you know, freely. And yet we who are the custodians of these standards, you know, do very little to ensure that we hold ourselves accountable to, and we have somebody helping us consistently look through and ensure that we remain on the straight and narrow. So this framework, which is from scripture, straight from scripture, using, you know, very professional matrices and processes of assessment, are some of the safeguard rails that we can post around institutions to keep us from the heartache that we see of wonderful African institutions eventually crumbling because of a lack of accountability frameworks or a lack of submission or subjection to scrutiny, so that you are being called back in. David's mighty men saying, no, David, you've gone too far there. You know, this is the boundaries within which you need to stay. These are the commitments you made. There's a gap here. What are you going to do about it, and how are you going to remain aligned? So That's what I'd say about accountability of large entities, large corporate entities. And that goes not just for business entities, but also the faith-driven sector. Whether it's a church, a Christian nonprofit, a ministry that has a business or entrepreneurial arm to it, it's imperative that we subject ourselves to scrutiny. Because as individual Christians, we're completely always subjected to the scrutiny of the Holy Spirit. Hence, the conviction of sin that leads to repentance and, you know, grace being extended to us. It happens individually for us as Christians. It must be the pattern for our institutions.
Thank you, Winnie. It's interesting for me that as I listen to you, I realize our organizations, our businesses are not, we use the term business, but it's actually a civil citizen. It has an identity in our society. And just like each of us as a citizen needs to be accountable, our organizations has a citizenship and needs to be accountable for how they are conducting their citizenship. And what I also hear from what you're saying is that when we think of accountability in business and we think of a board, that is just the tip of the iceberg or the very front edge of accountability. But actually, accountability doesn't start and end with a board meeting or reporting to a board. It's actually built up from the roots of accountability in an organization is much deeper. It's about the values, the beliefs, the perspectives of the organization, and all that flows into that little top end of reporting at a board level. And so I think as boards, a board needs to take more responsibility to look deeper at what is the underlying beliefs and value systems of an organization, and not just focus on the financial results and ticking all the risk boxes that that often we end up doing on boards. But Muyiwa, I mean, a board and accountability structures, that's a luxury for many businesses. In many people's view, many young entrepreneurs are running their own business and maybe battling to make it work or may become super successful and have no one around them to keep them accountable. What advice would you give to a younger entrepreneur that's building a business to put some accountability around himself or herself?
Yeah, thank you very much, Peter. There's a saying that says that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's something for every young entrepreneur, a sole trader. Very early in my marriage, I used to go anywhere. I'll just drive, I'll go to parties, but I was living near my father. He called me and said, I asked you, he didn't know. He told me that he who has a partner has a master. That when you have a partner, you have a master. And that's with me. Because I see that when God said, it's not good for the man to be alone, talking about Adam, I'll give him a helper. Sometimes you think the helper is just there to help in doing things, but is also to help in keeping us in check. I love what Joey said with the team. People below you, they can hold you accountable. People even not directly connected with what you're doing, stakeholders, community, they can help you. So there's a reason why Jesus said, if you are not faithful with that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? I take that to mean that you must learn accountability, even when you think you are no longer accountable. Mm-hmm. When you have learned it, faithful in that to do with making sure there's truth, making sure that things are kept, but it goes beyond that. You are expected to do more with what full of talent some time ago. Jesus gave that parable. There was the man that had one talent who kept it. There was a man that had five talents who used it and had 10. Now, accountability is not about, oh, here is your one talent. It goes beyond that. You know, when you're accountable, it makes you do more. So for those who are saying, well, I mean, I own the business, I own 100%. You are not expected to make your 100% 100%. You are supposed to work on it to make it 200%. Okay, that's part of accountability. So when we have the notion that accountability is to what you did with what you had, then it makes a person that is self-employed, we say, who is the owner of the business 100%, he thinks, well, I'm not going to steal from myself. Well, you can cheat the system. You can cheat yourself. You can do less with what you have that will make you not achieve what you should achieve. So when you look at, I think it's the same thing with our leaders. Leaders that become so powerful, they don't want to listen to anybody. They don't think they're accountable. And at the end of it, they may even be. Done well. So young people should look for people that they will be accountable to. Okay, I've had someone who came, he worked with me before, then went to work with a bank, and then he was being, he had much money to set up a business. And he came to me, he said, sir, I want you to be my chairman. I want to be, because I have this money, but me and ask me what I have done. I want somebody who will ask me, have you done this? A threat to be behind me that, oh, I'm going to report. I'm going to tell Muiwa what I did next week. So, you see, so accountability is not about keeping things safe, not stealing them. It's about maximizing what you have. So it's not a case of, I don't have to report to anybody. I own the business. But are you doing the best with the business? And when you know you're going to report to somebody, then you'll be careful. You will do your best in whatever you are committed to.
Thank you, Muiwa. Joey, a last question around this. What Muiwa speaks about is two different things. On the one hand, accountability being to really be a good steward of the things that have entrusted to us. But there's also a second part that I am. It's about having someone to keep our egos in check, or putting safeguards, guardrails around us to make sure that we don't lose our way in this process, especially when there's success involved. It's true even in the environments that you work in, Joey, as well, that accountability creates structure and safety for people within which they can flourish and be themselves without fear that fame or, different type of temptations or different things can go to your head. Is that something that you guys are intentional about when you travel with all these very young, very popular young people all over the world?
I think it's definitely not something that we are consciously, or the sports environment is consciously doing something about. And hence, there's a story or two about something that happens because we haven't safeguarded these guys. We've almost, you're so popular, got all the money you need, got all the freedom you need, and nobody to do accountability with. And I think part of it is that we haven't structured accountability in a good enough package that it looks attractive to people. So one of the best review models for me for a performance, which while I was thinking about it now, can be helpful for accountability structure, is that it's a good, better how model. So as to say, okay, to start off with, we're going on tour now. You're a young married guy. No, you've just come from tour. What was good about it? Hey, I enjoyed the extra reading in the word. I enjoyed being able to travel. I enjoyed this. Then the next question is, what could have been better? There were two nights out where I was out with friends. I stayed a bit longer than I should have. I might have a drink more than what I had. But it's all in positive psychology because I started, what was good? What can be done better? And then the empowering part, which is where partnership and accountability happens, how are you going to do those things better? Okay, it's no. Next time at 9:30, I think I'm going to leave the place then and I'm only going to have one beer. It's like, okay, then at 9:30 when I'm with him, I can nudge him and say, hey, man, I'm looking at the clock. It's around about that time where you're going to make a good decision. So that just for me gives accountability like a, I want to have that. And I think then if you take that at a team organizational level, you can have little pockets of accountability where that's all happening within a certain type of structure. Because then I walk into that model saying, I want to have this conversation because it's not framed as, like you said in the beginning, Peter, I'm going to get either a slap on the arm or I'm going to have to report to you about something. It's more like I'm engaging in my development by knowing what's going, what's good, what can be better, and I'm getting empowered in how I can do that better. And I'm going to finish on this last one. I read a book, Peter, which I thought was really good. It's called Black Box Thinking. And they take the difference at, I'm trying to summarize a book within a paragraph. So let's hope that goes well. So they took the medical field and aviation field. And they said, whenever there's an accident happens in aviation, a neutral person, independent person comes in, looks at the site and says, A, B, and C wasn't right. And then they do a report. Then they write it for everyone in aviation to read about this report so that the accident never, ever happens again. On top of that, they have a thing where if I've made an error, I'm allowed to report it within a certain time period, and then there won't be consequences for it as what there'd be consequences if it gets found out without me reporting it. The ultimate effect is 0.23% of people who ever flown ever died in an aeroplane accident. So that's very little. I know we're speaking about lives, but it's very little. On the other side, in the medical field, you always ask to find a non-disclosure. If a mistake happens, non-disclosure, it was the anesthetist, they didn't mean to do it, let's sign this. What ends up happening is the same accident keep reoccurring because those people are not accountable for their mistakes. So people keep dying on the one field and people don't die on the other field. So I think if we make structures that promote accountability, I'm sorry, my last one. My wife always says about after these things, these things are airy fairy, Joe. She says, she calls my stuff. She says, your psychology is psycho voodoo because it doesn't really work. And the reason she says is because if the leader in the organization doesn't seem to be rewarding people who are living accountable lives openly and people seeing it and being celebrated, and then people who aren't being reviewed and saying, hey, we need to speak about this, then the middle and lower in organizational structure, people say, well, that is just a joke. You guys speak accountability, it's on our walls, but I don't see it being celebrated. I don't see it being, admonished, I think that's the word, if it's not being done. So for me, I want to say if there's leaders on here, the degree that the leader rewards and challenges accountability to the degree that people in the organization will take it seriously.
Yeah, that's so valuable. Thank you, Joey. guys, I'm going to move us on to some of the questions we've received in the chat group. And Joey, I'm going to start with you because you touched on something now when you shared that story about, you know, sort of the young guy maybe at 9:30 saying, you know, is this the time we should be heading back to the room? It speaks about mentorship, actually, and so what? How do you see the difference between being holding someone accountable versus mentoring? Are they the same thing? Is a mentor and someone who you have an accountability relationship the same? Does it necessarily have to be the same? How do you see that? And maybe your own role from that perspective.
I would say the mentoring role and accountability is probably the minimum standard because I'm not always with my mentor, but I am always with my peers and I am always with people younger than me. So I see this as a 360 thing. I need the younger guy because it's one thing for me to tell the younger guy, hey, it's a good decision for you to be in bed by 9:30. But while he's going to bed at 9:30, I'm busy going out the hotel. The question to him must be, hey, why is that good for me, but not good for you, Joey? So suddenly, by me setting that standard with him, I'm getting from him pressure from the bottom to say, whoa, you better be behaving in the same way. And then on my peer level, somebody's going to be saying, hey, Joey, you're busy setting a standard for these young guys. They're looking up to you. Let's maybe check that behavior. And then hopefully then there's somebody above me as well saying, hey, Joe, in order for you to get where you're trying to go with this thing, you've got to live according. So I think in summary, I'd say it's a 360 thing for me, Peter.
Yeah, brilliant. Anyone want to add something on that? And I'll even open up to the audience if there's someone who wants to add anything on that.
Yeah, Peter, I just want to build on two things that both Muiwa and Joey have said. Muiwa talked about the younger person asking for him to be accountable. Can I be accountable to you? Can you hold me accountable for 1, 2, and 3? A desire for creation for an accountability structure. And then Joey talks about the good, better, and how model and having a structure around that. I see around the table, Alison Lee, if I may just mention that. I'm excited about Alison because Alison's institution, which is the George Whitfield College, is actually accredited. They have intentionally taken an accountability standard and framework, submitted themselves to scrutiny, had assessments year on year to look at the different areas of accountability, organizational accountability, 7 of them, very in-depth, found gaps from management reports that are given to them. And in a framework of accountability and organizational discipleship, so that it's not somebody looking from out in, but walking alongside. So after coming alongside GWC and saying, you know what, it's in both our best interests, because we've said that as believers, we are co-accountable before the Lord to each other and to him for all the spaces he's given us. And so we're saying, so here we are, we have a gap here. It's exactly what Joey is saying about the young man. I don't tell you to go to bed at 9 and then I hop onto the hotel and have fun at the same 9 o'clock. But we're saying, you know, the standards are the same across. So I am accountable to somebody who's scrutinizing me and I'm coming alongside you with this framework and saying, there's a gap here. You had committed to doing 1, 2, 3. There seems to be a challenge here. How can we tap other capacity perhaps around the continent, bring it along to you because we have a purview by God's grace for that, bring it along to you so that you can be able to make progress. What that has done for George Whitfield College is, I'm just taking it as an example, is they have seen the value of that to themselves and the benefits they have gathered. And they have taken smaller other theological colleges through training, brought them to us so that we can help them begin to establish accountability frameworks from their infancy and be accountable as they grow, for so that anyone who comes around and wants to work with them is confident that they're accountable. So that framework is available on the continent of Africa. It is available in America under the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. It is available in Africa through the African Council for Accreditation and Accountability, and just building a discipling relationship where we're working together, because it's in our corporate interest as faith institutions or Christian businesses to be faithful before God. So we are holding each other accountable. I'm living right as you live right, and you're checking on me and I'm checking on you, and we're growing together and letting our light so shine before men that they may see our good deeds and bring glory to our Heavenly Father. So just adding that on in there and thanking God for the synergy around the lakeside today and grateful for that commonality in mind on a need for intentional accountability and creating the structures for it and walking the talk.
That's such a wonderful additional perspective to say that accountability is not always about individuals walking alongside each other, but in our organizations, there can be other organizations that have invested themselves in understanding what healthy accountability looks like that can journey with us. And it's so beautiful to hear what you're sharing about Alison and their organization, then in turn walking with others. And so we're passing it on. And that is actually how discipleship works. It's about us being discipled and then walking as disciple in a journey in discipling others. Muyiwa, I want to come back to you. One of the questions we've got here is, what does a healthy accountability relationship look like? You mentioned about a young entrepreneur and asking you to be a chairman of his business. What are some practical things that you found people sometimes get wrong when they want to be in accountability? What expectations do you set when someone wants to walk in an accountability relationship with you? And what have you found is healthy? Where does the responsibility sit in this relationship?
I try to learn from how God relates with us. I think one of the biggest deterrent or discouragement to people about being accountable is a rebuke. You know, people don't want to be blamed. People don't want anybody to castigate them. But it's a natural, it's an instinctive thing when you find someone who's done something wrong or has not done something right. So it's a problem for the mentor or for the person overseeing the accountability process to stifle the response in such a way that you don't make the other person resent being checked, okay? To the extent that he now really goes down under the radar, because you can only complain about what you see. And that's why I find a lot of times, even in the corporate framework structure and all that, that people doctor documents, people, they do window dressing of their report because they don't want to look bad. Okay, so I think we need to correct this notion, okay, that, you see, we're not after just today, we are after tomorrow. If we put too much emphasis on the past, it can blind us, you know, cover our eyes from things that can happen in the future, bigger danger in the future, or bigger success in the future. So to me, I think it's a perception issue. Changing the attitude, yes, when people do wrong, there's need to punish. But then, you know, we don't punish to destroy. We want to do something to make them align with what's to be done and to do better in the future. Okay, so if people can be given that assurance that it's not about a destructive approach, it's about help. God deals with us. He says, all the instruction he has given to us, they are for our good. They are for our good. You know, not to, you know, shut us up or put us where we don't want to. So I think that's the angle, the practical angle that I give them the assurance. Let's give them the confidence. Let's encourage them that it's not about witch hunting, it's about getting the best out of every situation.
Thank you so much, Peter, and to the rest of our panel. Wow, what an incredible discussion. I just love some of the new thinking or the context that you gave us around just how accountability has historically looked in Africa, and just some of the conversation around what it would look like to how do we renew this? How do we repurpose this? And so that Christians, we actually have a massive role to play in bringing that accountability, not only to the individual, but actually to the collective. And so thank you for wonderful words of wisdom, incredible pearls. I've been taking copious notes here. I'm sure many of us have been doing that. Really, really enjoyed hearing from the four of you. So Muyiwa, Joey, Winnie, Peter, thank you very much for your time. And thank you so much to everybody that's been on this call with us. Thank you for taking out an hour and a half with us this morning to sit at the lakeside, to chat together, to just be part of a discussion with one another on accountability. And may we all just, I saw a few people comment in the comments bar, just how convicted some of us are again, myself included, just making sure that we have those accountability structures for us in multiple places, so that we can really live the best lives and the best versions of ourselves, what God's called us to. So yeah, thank you for your time. There's going to be a link that gets dropped in the chat function, and we'd love for you just to fill in. It's a quick survey. We'll email it to you as well, but if you can complete that survey, we're always wanting to learn from you. We're always wanting, this is sort of our accountability structure as Zawani. We want to hear from you on just how today was for you and how you enjoyed the session and what could be done differently, or areas that you really enjoyed. So thank you so much for your time. Again, thank you to our panel, and we look forward to seeing you at the next At the Lake.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Zawani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Zawani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at zawani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.